The following is a presentation of the Matt Talk Podcast Network.
Hi, I'm Jason Bryan from the Short Time Wrestling Podcast and founder of the Matt Talk Podcast Network. Shows on the network are individually owned and operated, and those opinions presented and expressed may not reflect others, the sponsors, patrons, or the parent network. Find more shows about the greatest sport in the world at the Matt Talk Podcast Network at matttalkonline.com.
I'll rip your arm off.
You know what? Get your ass back home, get in the gym, and figure out what the hell you're doing wrong.
Why is it called the five-point move?
I'm frustrated with the way our Greco guys in the United States are treated because they are good athletes, they are good human beings that want to win. We got to help them get there.
Hello and welcome to episode 41 of the 5 Point Move podcast. I'm Tim Hans, founder and senior editor of 5pointmove.com. No Hall this episode, no problem. I'm saving him for something else. In fact, it's just me and two guests for E41, two Minnesota Storm representatives, two-time, in fact, in two straight senior tournaments, two-time national runner-up, Calvin Germanaro, one of the sickest, most talented young athletes we have in the United States program. And then we have one of my personal favorites and certainly one of the most entertaining wrestlers in any style in the country, and that is Alec the Gunslinger Ortiz. All right, Calvin, let's start with you first. You went 72 kilograms at U23. I'm sure just you felt like wrestling and you didn't feel like cutting. Thing that struck me is, since I had to cover junior and U23 on two different fronts between 5 Point Move and Flow, all I was doing for 2 weeks is checking the entry list. It's like literally all I was doing. Okay, who's coming? Who's coming? Who's coming? Who's coming? Who's coming? Because that way, when I have to write about this in a preamble, I have an idea of who's going to be in each weight class and so on and so forth. Then we'd get to the tournament or whatever the night before. I see that you're competing. So I didn't know you were going. Usually I know these things. I didn't this time.
I honestly didn't know I was going. I didn't think I was going. I had no intention of going. We had been on the mat for like a week and a half leading up to that. I work at school. I had a lot of things going on, but then I bartended downtown St. Paul and all my shifts start at 9 p.m. and the late night type stuff. And all of a sudden Tuesday, I believe it was, the governor of Minnesota got on and shut all bars in Minnesota down at 10 p.m. effectively, pretty much put me out of the job for at least the rest of the weekend until my schedule changed. And all of a sudden, I was just sitting there Tuesday night with no plans for the rest of the week. Had all my schoolwork done, so I was like, well, might as well go hop in the car and head to Omaha. Signed up pretty much an hour before it closed, I think. Hence why I went 72. Couldn't really make – I could have, but not having really prepared at all for the tournament and not having planned on going, I wasn't going to go cut my balls off for a day and a half just to make 67 or 69, whatever it was. And so, it was pretty much, I had nothing going on as of Tuesday afternoon. So why not go down and see what I can make happen? And we all saw how that went. So,
okay. Well, here's how it went. So don't do this self-deprecating routine, how it went.
No, that was not at all self-deprecating. That was I'm pretty sure we all know how tournament went. It's just we don't need to go explain.
Yeah, you should be a speech writer. You should be a speech writer. Okay. How did 74 kilos feel? 74 kilos.
Big. I've had experience over at 72.
Right.
And that area a few years ago. And I was a little bigger then. After making 67 now for 2 years and a hard 67 day of 74 kilos night before. So it felt like I was, not giving up or I could feel the difference, but at the same time, I've trained in the practice rooms Ortiz, Pat Smith, Epps. I'm used to that kind of size difference, but still, it didn't feel like I was locking out and competing against guys that were 70 or 67 kilos by any means.
When there's a 2 kilo allowance, especially domestically, forget anything else. When there's a 2 kilo allowance at 55, not discernible. 60 kilograms, you don't notice it. When you start getting to like 67, 72, 77, that's where you start to notice that 2 kilo allowance on people, I feel like. You don't see it with the shrimps in the first 2 or 3 weight classes. But once you start getting to 67, 72, 77, it's right in that kind of wheelhouse where I think it does grab your attention a little bit more. 87, 97, not so much. But definitely in those, I mean, 67 is a lightweight class, don't get me wrong. But still, you go back and watch matches from U23 this past week. The guys at 72 definitely look different compared to the guys at 67. Like, there's a difference just visually, I feel like.
Yeah, and I mean, I actually, Tuesday night when I decided that I was going to go 60 or 72, or I thought I was gonna actually wrestle even, I hit up Jake Aller, one of the Gopher guys, one of my good friends, lives down the block, and I was like, dude, can I come over? I need to get on a scale. I haven't since Iowa. And literally hopped on a scale Tuesday night, and I was 73 kilos, and I was like, okay, perfect. Good. Let's go have some fun and wrestle.
The one thing that cannot be taken away from you, and I'm not saying this to massage your ego, I don't think you need me to do that, is that Zach Grimes, for as impressive as I thought he was pretty much all tournament long, the thing is that in that final, pretty much all of his scoring, never mind the conclusive sequence, came at the result of your attempts. At the very least, you know that you tried to create action, you tried to go for throws. Did that make everything feel a little bit better, or did you really feel so stung by falling to Grimes?
No, this one stings. Nothing against Grimes. He wrestled in a phenomenal tournament. He pinned me, so I can't really say anything bad against him by any means. But I, looking back, like, especially kind of like the last year, 2 years I've had some tough losses, pretty much actually coming in finals. But at the same time, like, I could go into each of those matches in depth and give a whole spiel on that. But this one, I lost this one for myself 100%. I know, like, how I did. I know when I did it. And that's kind of why it hurts. Because, like, after that, literally it was when that challenge switched, kind of that whole first maybe 3.5 minutes, I wrestled some, like, the most solid, like, hand fighting and wrestling I've done in a while. And then got that takedown for 2, or whatever that scramble ended up being. And I was wholeheartedly convinced those were my 2. I didn't think it'd go any other way. All of a sudden, he challenged it, and I was pumped. Like, I was keeping my composure. Even my coach, my grandpa, came up and told me, like, okay, you're going to be up 7-0, and I knew that, like, I had that match. I mean, to be completely honest with you, in my head, I was 30 seconds away from checking him. That's, like, I knew that match, and then I haven't even gone back to look at the match yet, to be honest, but, like, however they end up scoring it, when that, like, challenge flipped and it went from 7-0 in my head to 4-1. Even though I was still winning, I kind of just, like, lost my focus. And I remember, and all of a sudden I was, like, going for big throws. And, like, I was tired, but, like, I could have hung in and fought another 2 minutes. I could have definitely ended the match the way it started, but I kind of just lost it. And I know that, and I knew that in the moment. I knew that the moment the match ended, and that's kind of why this one definitely does sting.
Would it be that you were, after that, you were, I don't want to say force, but were you trying to force scores after that because you were pissed off?
It wasn't that I was pissed off by any means.
You made it sound like that.
No, I wasn't pissed off. I wrestled.
Ortiz,
like,
it sounded like that, no?
Yeah, I think one of the things that my parents always talked about growing up was tone. And maybe not to be the old man here, but maybe tone is something that we can work on a little bit, Cal. Because it's quite sad that you have misrepresented yourself on accident. I know you well enough to maybe know, like, to read what he's saying, but yes, the long short of I would agree with that.
All right, Cal, keep going because I want to hear this.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not really all good on the whole over the phone situation, but yeah, I mean, it wasn't really like I was pissed off. I think I wrestle the kind of wrestling where I want to go for the tech. I want to get off the mat, and I don't know why, but like going from 7-0 to 4-1 in my head, all of a sudden I felt like I didn't have the same cushion that I had a second ago. And I was just trying to like put up points and build up that lead again. Cause like 3 points, you're winning, but you're one move away from losing. And I kind of just went like, lost my soul to some more instinctual, like trying to get, throw up some points and make something happen that really didn't need to happen at that point in the match.
I hope it's not the case that this is the last tournament you wrestle before the Olympic trials. I don't know what is going to happen, and none of us do. I don't think we know what's going to become available, if anything does. That being said, you are in the Olympic trials, and your weight class is one of the best weight classes we have, certainly, and I expect every single match pretty much throughout that entire bracket to be really, really, really hot. Yeah, I just think it's going to be all full of heat, 67. So have you thought, like, okay, I've got the Olympic trials potentially next, you know, whatever, 5 months from now, 4.5 months from now, or whatever it is at this point. How do you make sure you don't lose that kind of focus in a match of much higher stakes coming up in, Pennsylvania here?
I mean, I'm actually, like I mentioned, pretty much throughout my whole career, I've been like working a few nights a week in school full time, and coming as of December, I'm going to be taking like a leave of absence just for this semester from school. Going to be toning down my work schedule and stuff, and pretty much just wrestling is going to be my full-time thing for a few months. So I'm hoping to for sure get like overseas maybe, or just get somewhere. I need to compete. I want to compete. And now I finally will have like an opportunity to do so.
Well, I'd love it if everybody got overseas. I would love it if just 5 people got overseas at this point. I don't even know what's going to happen. Who knows? Anyway, we'll get to that at the conclusion of this next branch of topics involving Mr. Alec Ortiz, who we haven't spoken to in quite a while, at least not on the record anyway. Alec, when it comes to Iowa, which is a little over a month ago at this juncture, I say this with absolute complete honesty, and I don't like to over-dramatize things because I have a tendency to get like really carried away about certain things, I think. But the way your body looked, and when I say that, I'm talking just everything combined. I don't necessarily mean like, you know, like your figure or something like that.
You don't look good, Alec.
All right.
But
I'll take
it. But your legs, I was paying strict attention to your legs. I did not get a chance. No, let me scratch that. No one got a chance to see you wrestle at your first comeback tournament in February at Grandma Cup in Cuba because that was not broadcast. And I know you didn't love your appearance there anyway. When I was watching you wrestle at the Nationals last month, I was like, my gosh, like, you looked different. Now, maybe part of that was you really felt great and you were really super hungry to wrestle and whatever else. But at the same time, like, I don't know, man, like just the whole physical presence you brought, I don't know if I've ever seen you look better. Is that me getting crazy and over the top, or is there something to it?
I would like to think that I probably did look a little bit better. I felt like I had a more intention with the way I was wrestling. I like action. I like to make things happen. I can kind of relate to what Cal's saying as far as just wanting to get out there and put a match away. I was never the guy in high school to, you know, cut a guy and take him down. Like, if you're better, be better and end the match. So getting after it has always been something like it's been a focus of mine. But with Greco, I didn't necessarily have the fundamentals all the time. I should say I didn't use my fundamentals that I had. It's not like Dan Chandler and Brandon Paulson and Coach Zuniga and all these great coaches we have here weren't telling me, keep your elbows in, hand fight, get to good position, don't just dive at the body and try to like throw people, which I should have listened to earlier. And I, you know, in some matches I do better and then other ones I do worse. But realizing the time frame that I had to, you know, coming off of the injury to kind of like reset. I was watching practice. I mean, Cal, you can call me out if I'm wrong here, but I came to practice on crutches and watched and really took the time to, I had to make advantage of the time that I had and what I could do watching film and paying attention to stuff, watching matches that I, you know, maybe gave away from not having good positions. So I really focused a lot on where the holes were in my game and then trying to be honest with, is this something I really, like, am I going to focus on doing this? Or am I just, it's fun to just, you know, get in there and scrap and scramble and fling people. And that's fun, but winning is more fun. So I really emphasized trying to have more of a purpose and not just citing the chaos. Most of the time worked for me, but against the best guys, you know, if I want to win, beat the best guys in the country and the best guys in the world, which is what I want to do, was not going to work. So I made a conscious effort to be more physical with purpose. I mean, if you wrestle Pat Smith every day, he just pushes guys around and pummels and is never out of position. So I had the best partner you can hope for in the country at my own weight class to really learn from. And so that was very beneficial to have. And I did feel really good. I looked different because of the hair. That definitely was the thing that I had some of the kids that I coach in youth wrestling, like their parents were like screen capping stuff from like Flow Wrestling. Dude, you look like, if I didn't know you, I'd think that you were like a scary person.
Yeah, you did. You look like a maniac. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. So I don't know. I think it was a good test to see where I was. And I was excited to get on the mat. And kind of like we talked about already, we don't know when we're going to get another chance to compete. And for myself, I'm not qualified for trials. So I have to really make the most out of any mat time I can get in a competition setting to iron out whatever kinks that are still there, because that, you know, we hate to hope that it's true, but that could be it domestically and potentially even internationally. So I kind of came in with a little bit more purpose and a better focus.
I guess both of you could speak to this. Alec, your methodology is, I mean, okay, your methodology certainly prior to October 9 was very well known. That's what the name you got dubbed with was, the Gunslinger. The Gunslinger.
Like, I still got to make that shirt. It's fully designed in my head. I just haven't been able to pull it off like I want.
That last Alec Ortiz shirt I wear all the time. I love that shirt.
Lots of kids didn't have it.
Well, what I want to know is that it's like, okay, you're really, really recognized for this kind of like butchering style where it was physical anyway, but it was always trying to score, whether it's from a conventional position, whether it's from a herky jerky position, whether it's I'm going to try to front headlock this guy from, you know, some obtuse angle, whatever it was. But it was also really exciting. And then at the same time, pretty damn effective as well. Of course, part of your style was also, I'm going to try to score, like Arturo Gatti, like basically.
Oh, yeah.
It's like, I will take two punches to get one really good punch. My question, I guess, is how do you strike a balance between having more, like positional discipline with still having those elements that kind of made you, you?
I think the important thing there is just being more disciplined. And again, like I said previously, it's not like Coach Paulson and Coach Chandler. And I mean, we can go all the way to college, you know, Jay Robinson, all these guys, like they weren't telling me, hey, let's shore up the fundamentals a little bit. And then like, that's the base. And especially with Greco, you know, being wrestling folk style for so long in college, that's in my nature, is to want to try the goofy stuff and to like, that's, I can't really turn that off, but it's having the discipline to realize, like, it's not there. Like, stop grabbing this thing and throwing yourself to your back, or stop reaching for this body lock and getting thrown in the process, or whatever it was. And so I think it's really just been more of a discipline aspect than, you know, that inclination is still there. And there are still times where I'll think, you know, I want to try something crazy, or I want to go for a big move. And in my head, I'm like, oh, I can get it. But positionally, again, looking at all the film like I did, I realized I know what I thought at that second of the match. Like, oh, this body lock is open. I'm just going to step forward and reach and grab it. And then looking at it from, you know, from the mat side camera, I'm like, oh, I wasn't even close. Like, that's no wonder I didn't get that. So it's having that perspective, really breaking down the film and seeing where I was not getting those opportunities. And then now just realizing, like, you have to work a little bit harder for those you got to untie the knot. You have to put yourself in a position to score, not just, you know, charge blindly into a chaotic scramble.
When it comes to Iowa and you place third, I remember thinking back to, I think it was 2018, and that was, who'd you struggle with in 2018? Cody Pack, if I remember.
Yeah. Yeah, I lost to him in the first round of the tournament and the last match of the tournament. Like, the same way. I think he just hit me in forearm throws in a row in less than, like, 2 minutes.
Well, even if, I remember a few days after the tournament, I texted you, or the day after, or the weekend after, whatever it was, I remember I texted you, and I was like, you know, that was a really impressive kind of performance, and you texted back to the effect of, well, it was good to know that I have that kind of run in me. And granted, this was a little bit different in that you made the semifinal, you know, you wrestled Pat. And that was a brutal match, and that was a really entertaining match. That was probably, I mean, one of my three favorite matches of the tournament. At the time when I saw it, I was like, oh my gosh, that's the best match I've seen in a year. You know, I was all nuts about it. But anyway, I digress. You wind up taking third. So if you compare a tournament like this Nationals, where I thought, you know, you looked superb, to a Nationals from 2018 where you placed fourth, in your mind mentally, whether you're doing comparing and contrasting or however you're looking at it, how do you see this as its own, like, isolated moment in time, like this performance?
I think it's a good milestone to realize I can still do it, and to kind of break down that a little bit more. This is the third major surgery that I've had to come back from in my life. I blew out my right ACL in high school, like at the end of my freshman year of high school. And at that point, I mean, I was young. I was like 15, 16. I don't know, however you are, freshman year of high school. And my mother was in the medical. I've always been in really fortunate situations where I've had really good medical care around me. And so my mom worked at the hospital, and so she made sure we had the best doctors and told that I think the doctor that did my surgery said, like, you're going to, he wanted to retire. She's like, no, you're going to do my son's knee, then you can retire. So all that is to say, I did that. And I remember coming back and wrestling the next year and being incredibly nervous for my first duel. Like, I was warming up and, like, you know, joints pop, you know, and I had a little joint pop in the knee and I was like, well, I just blocked my knee again. I'm done. Like, every little thing was just so nerve wracking and I was so terrified of re-injuring and going through the process again, but I worked through it and I ended up winning state that year and I placed in Fargo in both styles. But to get to those points was like, it was a relief to like, okay, I can still do this. Like I'm still at the level that I want to be. And it's not over. Like, it's kind of a crazy thing to think when you're, you know, like I said, a freshman in high school, that was a big moment for me. And then I had a labral reconstruction in college and the same thing. I was out for a long time. Thankfully, again, at the University of Minnesota, really good healthcare. I think, you know, the guy that did my shoulder, I think worked with the Vikings and, but again, same thing. I think we did talk about that before. Yeah. So like it was another situation, but that time it wasn't as daunting because I'm like, all right, it's a shoulder versus a knee, but I've done this before. You gotta be disciplined, do the rehab, do the exercises. Working hard is not a problem. Just do what you're supposed to do. And you should be able to get back. Like, there's always a possibility that it won't happen, but it did. It worked out. Oh, my shoulder doesn't really bother me anymore. I could never really throw a ball that well anyway, so that's not like a lingering issue or anything. But then going back and, you know, getting back in the starting lineup for the Gophers and then transitioning into Greco, it was like, okay, good, I can still do this. Like, I'm still at the level, I can still compete, and I'm not, you know, the career's not over yet. And so the same thing with this knee. I was bummed out when I blew it out because
at the time you're thinking, oh my gosh, this is out a year right before an Olympic year. I can imagine.
Yes. Yeah. So the timing was not great. I mean, had things stayed the way that they were, I would have made it back just in time for a last chance qualifier and stuff. But I was bummed out, but there was never a thought in my mind that I wasn't going to come back from it. And I mean, I did just an ACL in high school, and this was ACL, MCL, meniscus, like monumentally greater. And it was a longer recovery, 7 weeks. I couldn't walk on it. My wife had to just deal with me on crutches. She had to push me into the house. We didn't, in the snow post surgery, like, it, the whole thing was a beast, but the, you know, going to physical therapy and everything, I was always like, well, I'm going to get back for this. Like, I had no doubt in my mind that it would happen. It was just, you know, how long does it take? Hopefully I can get back before Olympic trials. And going to the Cuba tournament, that being my first competition, it was like, all right, here it is. Like, this is the test. Like, can I still do this thing? You know, I know how I felt in the room, but here's the test. And I literally scored no points at the tournament. And so coming off of that was a little bit of a bummer because I'm like, dude, this is the level I want to be at. I literally got shut out. Then there was a little, you know, I was pretty bummed off of that trip. It was good training. It was a good experience. But coming back into the room, there was maybe a little more sense of urgency because I definitely told my wife and some of the coaches, like, I just need to score points in this year. I can't get skunked the whole year. So the first goal when we got to the Iowa tournament was just to score a point. I just wanted to get on the board. Like, that was it. And, you know, having the tournament that I had and being able to win matches, score points, have a close battle with the number one guy in the country at my weight, it was, you know, obviously I would have liked to have gone to the finals and I want to win the whole thing, but it was that reaffirming moment again of, okay, I can still do this. Like, I'm still at this level. Hearing some folks say that I did look better and I felt like I did wrestle better tactically than I have in the past. It was a good relief and a good milestone and a familiar one and a very welcome one that, okay, I'm still here. I can still do
it. How did you feel in the immediacy following the tournament? as far as soreness and anything else?
I felt pretty good. We drove back that night, actually, because I only live 5.5 hours-ish from the area.
You people from the Midwest, man, you guys look at 5.5 hours, 6 hours, 8 hours. Like, that's not some Herculean drive.
You guys got those little states, man. You got the little state. Well, when you were at J-Rob camp and you pack up on the last day in Oregon and you got to drive back to Minneapolis, no one's stopping to see the sights, or, you know, you're holding it until you need gas, and then you're getting home as fast as you can. So I've made a habit out of driving way too long on way too few a breaks. I've driven from Minnesota to Colorado Springs on multiple occasions in one shot, Oregon to Colorado Springs in one shot, and, you know, Oregon to Minnesota.
How long a trip is Oregon to Minnesota?
Oh, that's like 33, 34. I kind of drive the speed limit too. I'm one of those guys. But yeah, I've done that with the J-Rob crew. Me and my little brother did it 2 or 3 summers ago, just me and him, and he can't even drive. So yeah, a quick little 5.5 hours after the tournament was like, good, I get to sleep in my own bed tomorrow. And so, I guess all I was to say is I felt pretty good. I want to say I went for a run, maybe not the next day. I think I might have done some yoga the next day, but overall, like, body health felt good, surprisingly good.
Oh, well, that brings me to the next point, is what is the deal with you guys right now as far as practice schedule in Minnesota? Because I'm guessing the university isn't available to you guys, is it?
No, we have to improvise a lot. If there was a time there, we're wrestling in Pat's garage. So we find mats where we can. It's tough to kind of make that happen, especially now Pat moved houses, so we can't work out in his garage. But, I mean, now it's getting cold, too, so you don't want to be in the garage. But, yeah, we're still waiting for the facility to open up for the Gophers. And I get real angry every time I drive past the facility and I see football walking in, or, you know, name a sport that's not us. And I'm yelling like a crazy person, like, how come they get to go play and we can't come play? Like, just let us into our spot. We'll clean up, man.
Has there been any talk of a potential timeline where you might be able to return to a sense of normalcy as far as practice goes?
I haven't heard anything on that. I'm sure that we're probably lower on the priority list in terms of, like, room access. Obviously, it's like the Gopher facility. Obviously, like, we're very tied with that and the history of it. And I mean, there's a giant picture of Paulson on the wall in the wrestling room, so you can't really keep us out. But just in terms of, you know, legality, safety, they're going to have to watch for the student athletes first and foremost. So, I don't even know when those guys are going to be able to get back in, much less the, you know, the extras, you know, ourselves included in that. So I haven't heard anything yet. I don't know if Cal, if you have, because I know you kind of hang out with some of the Gophers a little more, or you're around them a little bit more, but I definitely don't know any timeline.
I don't know. We don't really talk about that stuff when we hang out.
That doesn't surprise anyone.
So.
Yeah, it doesn't surprise.
When can we get back in the wrestling room, huh?
Yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen, listeners, we're no longer on camera with each other, but we were earlier. And just so everybody knows, Calvin Germanaro tonight looks potentially like he's planning a bank robbery. Okay?
Not at all.
He's normally a decent-looking young man, but his hair is all frazzled. He's wearing eyeglasses with lenses the size of a car tire. I should probably try to capture that photo, that image, and use it in the promotional material for this here episode. Like, Alec Ortiz, okay, even with a knitted hat on, he looks like he has multiple felons on his record. But the difference is that Germanaro looks like a special kind of maniac.
Well, you expect that out of me. You don't expect that out of Cal. You want to talk about a picture. The next time he shows up to practice, I'll have to snap one. This dude shows up to practice dressed more immaculate than anybody probably should. I'm talking like dress shoes, dress pants. I'm like, where are you coming from? It's 10 o'clock in the morning. Like, I realize, like, I'm, you know, I work in a print shop, so my stuff's got ink on it and I look ridiculous, but I'm like, this is too much, dude. Like, I thought you worked at a bar. Like, what is going on here? So,
oh, that was for an intern, but yeah.
Okay, so you were turning it on there.
Yeah, you're either hitting it. The looks of vibes. I think.
Oh, it looks good. It was just way too much for me to handle at that time.
No, I'm talking about tonight.
Just
hanging out. Glasses get a little, I don't know, style.
Is this the ensemble you put together if you're meeting a lady caller?
Oh, if I would like meet a lady, I'd 100% go out in this. Yeah. Oh,
it's
for
just
sure.
It's something else. I mean, look, I'm talking. I'm wearing a black hoodie pulled up indoors, you know, for no apparent reason. I don't think I look particularly all that normal. It's just slick Calvin German arrow with the nice cornrows and everything else. Like, you guys need to see what that looks like when all the braids go completely crazy. And he's sitting in front of a laptop monitor with stairs in the background. Stairs. He didn't hear us when I was like, why does he have stairs in the background? Like, he was sitting in the bottom of stairs.
The consensus here is that the look is good.
Well, whatever the reason.
The consensus on this side, over here in Minnesota, the look is good, according to the roommates.
I'll take your word for it. I mean, we live in slightly different regions, which means that there are slightly different cultural norms, I would presume.
He's not my roommate, so let's throw that in there, too.
I mean, not going to go against Alex.
Gentlemen, it's not so much of a hot-button topic, I guess, at the moment, but if both of you make the Olympic team and go, Alec will have to go, I would suppose, and qualify 77 in Bulgaria. And so you both go to Tokyo. This is what I think is really interesting, is that you both go to Tokyo and you're in Tokyo for what? I mean, it depends on who goes from your families and stuff to determine how much extra time you spend there. But you guys go to Tokyo. You have your competition days in the very beginning of the month of August. And then you're there, let's say, I don't know, 12 days. Just throw 12 days on there, okay? And then you come back and it's like, hey, start preparing for a world team trials, because that's going to be right on the heels of the Olympics, since the 2021 World Championships are, of course, in Oslo, Norway, I want to say first week of October, if I'm not mistaken. How's that sound?
That sounds right, yeah.
For the sake of this conversation, what would that be like if you could imagine it? Wrestling in the Olympics. Just wrestling in the Olympics. And then it's like you come home, usually you would decompress for a month, maybe a little longer, because you figure your first tournament of the year won't be till probably November, maybe, with like NYAC or something like that. And instead it's no. You got a trials coming up, like right away.
I mean, I might just hang out if I got my gold medal from the Olympics already. I might just... Just sit around for a little bit.
Well, you'd get the Living the Dream medal fund, so you'd be able to buy another pair of glasses. How about you, Alec?
I am a really big fan of, like, samurai culture. So I'm going to definitely hang around Tokyo long enough to figure out how to get myself a real samurai sword. And
well, you
bring
can buy
it
them online.
No. I want Hattori Hanzo to make this sucker. I want authenticity.
China. It's authentic.
You don't even realize how ridiculous that is, sir. They come from Japan. Okay, show some respect.
From Japan.
I think if you get in the position to make the team and do that and have a short turnaround. There isn't no, I mean, there's the debate whether how much crossover there is from folk style to Greco and doing both and, you know, what one does for the other. But then one thing that folk style did prepare me for was the quick turnaround time. You know, you're making weight 2-3 times a week and you're competing 2-3 times a week. And so I've done it before. If that's what it ends up being, then yeah, why not? Let's go, you know, you got to prove it. You just win the Olympics. All right, prove it. Go win a world championship. You know, why not?
Yeah, I think it's going to be awesome. I really think it's going to be awesome because there's going to be no chance for once. There's going to be no chance that of a like a, you know, not to look at this too macro, but there's no chance for like a Greco come down, you know, and that's the problem with the Olympics. It's sort of the problem with the Worlds, but it's a little bit. The Olympics speak for themselves, really, because it's like you have an Olympic Games in wrestling, and it's this, it's so huge. It's just all encompassing. It occupies everybody's attention in the country and around the world. People who are in grammar school, high school, even if they have zero idea about international wrestling and Team USA and everything else, they're locked into what's going on at the Olympics. And then it's like the Olympics end, and then it almost feels as though everybody who's like kind of on the fringe of being a wrestling fan or involved with wrestling kind of forgets about international wrestling for quite a while. You know, at least in this case, there's going to be, first off, not enough time really for that to occur. And second of all, an astounding cross promotional opportunity, because you'll be able to market the world championships pretty much either right before the Olympics, during the Olympics, or at least right after the Olympics. It'll be like, okay, if you like this, well, guess what? There's a world championships in, you know, whatever it will be, a month and a half. So I think it's an excellent opportunity for international wrestling and specifically Greco, because if anything's going to get forgotten about, especially in the United States, it's going to be Greco. So Greco has a chance to dominate headlines throughout the latter part of the summer, moving into the fall next year. And we've never had that before. Nothing even close to it.
Yeah, that's a good point. I hadn't thought about it that way in terms of like building momentum and growing the sport. It is difficult. 3 out of 4 years, it's difficult to explain to somebody what you do and have them grasp. I actually understand it. Like, I'm a professional wrestler, and you're not going to say that. It's just so hard for people to understand. So to say I'm in the Olympics, you know, I'm an Olympian or I'm training for the Olympics, they know that brand recognition immediately. And then to be able to follow up with, and also, like, just like you said, if you want to see more of that, that is, that's going to be a really big opportunity that I think we have to put the facilities in place to make sure that we can ride whatever, you know, hopefully we're winning all the medals, but any type of success, we gotta push that forward, because that's going to be pretty huge. And I don't know that that has happened, at least in my lifetime, where you've had an opportunity to kind of double up like that.
No, we've never had it. Consider this, Alec. The NCAA championships takes place in mid-March or so. It's not like there's a large carryover from the NCAA Division I National Championships to the U.S. Open, even in freestyle. It doesn't carry the fan base all the way home to the U.S. Open and eventually the World Team Trials or whatever's next. It just doesn't. Now, in this era, there's deviations because of media. There's a lot of wrestling media, and there's a million different ways to follow wrestling, especially collegiate wrestling. And I think a lot of the college programs, especially the bigger ones, do a really good job of getting it out to their respective fan bases. Like, hey, so-and-so and so-and-so and so-and-so from our college are competing in the United States Nationals next month. And like, I think they do a pretty good job of that. But at the same time, it's still not even close to being the same thing to what the Olympics might be able to do for international wrestling. At least that's how I see it as we sit here today. but we're also sitting here today in the midst still of a pandemic where wrestling is few and far between as far as events go. So, you know, I guess you got to take that into account as well. As it were, we have, I don't know, there's 2 months till the new year, almost a little less, I don't know, 6 weeks. Do you guys think that there's a, and I don't want to turn this into a pessimistic question, so let me reshape it just a little. Do you guys think that there is a good chance? Are you optimistic that you'll be able to get something in somewhere prior to, you know, late March, early April?
Well, I got the smart ass answer that I like to give for a lot of, like, do you think there's a chance questions. I say everything in life is 50-50. It either will or won't happen. So that's my deflecting, you know, Bill Belichick answer. But I haven't really thought too much about, I mean, hopefully, yes. I'm a pretty optimistic person, and I like to think that hopefully we will get a chance to compete in some capacity, you know, okay. Like Cal said, maybe going overseas.
Let me cut you.
I don't know.
Let me cut you. When I ask you this, see it through the full scope, Alec. If I'm going to ask it, give it your best shot here. You understand the tenor of the country currently, okay, with cases and everything else, and I'm sure you're paying attention to what's going on with college wrestling and when's that going to start and everything. We've heard stuff about Serbia. We've heard stuff about other countries in Europe and everything else. Just give it your best shot here when I ask you that. Like, what is your feeling? Do you think that there'll be a window potentially in, let's say, between, I don't know, mid-late December and early March? Like, do you think that we're heading in the right direction to where something will be available for either you or both you and Cal in 21 before you guys have to go ahead and get prepared for the very, very serious tournaments coming up?
From what I understand of global cases, different countries that are handling things better and worse, our best bets would be to, for some country that's doing a good job, and I don't know well enough to name, like, this is the spot, we're going to this town, but one of those countries that would then allow Americans to travel there, because I know that there are certain restrictions per country, per, like, okay, we're going to have this tournament, but, like, Americans can't come, or America's not comfortable sending a people, so I'm a little bit less inclined to say that it would happen, because it seems like a series of yes and questions that have to line up in the right direction. And it seems like it's easier to just be safe and say no, especially with what we have moving forward and what's on the line for us, you know, towards Olympic trials. So I guess short answer, no. I don't think that it'll happen. I'm hopeful because I'm a generally a happy, hopeful dude, but I don't think it'll happen.
I mean, I think that there's going to be, I think they're definitely going to try and make opportunities. And that's kind of like one thing that's giving me hope, like looking out, is that it is like, this isn't just kind of, I think of it in terms of, if this was like 2017, for example, if the world championships are a big deal, but like in the grand scheme of things, they're a lot easier to cancel world championships than just cancel the Olympics, much less postpone another year, however they would deal with that, which makes me think that like all the countries are kind of in the same boat and people are going to be wanting to try and get the athletes opportunities to compete. And the closer it gets to the Olympic trials, that they're going to kind of do whatever they can to make those happen. Like, that's optimistically speaking. But, I mean, like you said, it could easily go either way. I mean, it would not surprise me one bit if I competed for the last time for a few months.
All right, one last question, and that is, if events are unavailable in whatever shape or form prior to we get into the spring here, is there a plan in place? Like, is there like a backup plan in place, or are you just going to have to adapt? And when I say backup plan, what I kind of mean is, like, I mean, I don't know how match day works at Minnesota Storm. I don't know if, you know, I don't know if you even have them. And I don't know what the U.S. program will offer. We know that there's a couple of camps coming up in early December and everything like that. But if you can't get a competition in before the spring comes, is there a way to kind of fill in the gap a little bit just amongst you guys as far as, I don't know, and I hate to be dopey about it, but just simulation and different kinds of ways to have live goes and different scenarios and so on and so forth? Or is this just, we just train and ride it out?
I mean, I personally think, I mean, right now there's a perfect example. We've got some guys from like Illinois RTC in Minnesota, and I think that everybody is in the same boat. And so if we can't compete, I think guys are going to be reaching out to other RTCs, other places to try and get like training. I mean, like we always do, but in like a lot more, how am I, like a lot more, I'm drawing a blank on the word, volume.
Nice.
But like a lot higher volume, closer to like they're going to be, like you said, trying to simulate whatever they can to get more competition than they usually get in their practice rooms.
Yeah, I think that's, I mean, that's pretty accurate. That's, thankfully, there's been those camp opportunities that have popped up in Utah and then the upcoming one. So especially if it does look like we're not going to get the chance to compete, those things I feel like are going to continue to happen. And we all know each other. We all have each other's phone numbers. And so it's not, and it, the upside, if there is one, of this pandemic situation lasting so long, is we're getting more information on how to safely go about keeping ourselves in shape and, you know, making sure that we are prepared for when the tournaments come. So there's, I mean, I know myself, I got tested recently because, you know, all those guys are from Illinois. We all got tested prior to coming together, and it was pretty easy in Minnesota. I walked in just with no appointment. It took me about an hour, like from pulling into the spot to pulling out, getting the test, and then I had 24 hours. So places are getting better at allowing those things to happen, whereas before it was pretty much out of the question. Now it's more reasonable, and it's good to have that, like, more of a community. Like, now we're forced, if we can't compete against each other, then we still got to have different looks. So I think it'll be good in terms of just Team USA, like the abstract, like all of us American Greco wrestlers working together to get better. So there could be some really positive connections and stuff that come out of necessity because we don't have anywhere else to, you know, to compete.
Well, that's a good point. A lot of this could bring people closer together. It already has, that's for sure. I think that's an underrated concept, in fact, because when things are normal, there's not, even when there's a camp or two in Colorado Springs or whatever it is, I mean, already since, you know, July, August, we've seen more joint training opportunities than there ever are in a normal year, really. So
mm-hmm.
I think there's something to that, actually. I really totally do.
Well, I can't remember who said it. Go ahead, Cal, you go first.
Well, I mean, this is at risk of jumping topic and starting a whole separate tangent. I kind of think that also, like, from what I'm seeing, almost like a generational thing. Because I feel like a lot of the people, like a lot of the younger guys, are a lot, like, closer, if you will, or at least better friends and more open to training with each other. Like, shit, at U23s, we had me, Benji, Lenny Merkin, Peyton Amania at the table next to us. We all went out to dinner. Like, we're all, like, homies. And so I feel like more nowadays than ever, guys are just, like, more open to training with each other, I feel like, if that makes sense.
There's that younger group, and obviously some of them come from Northern together too, and that helps. But there's that group, and other people have paid attention to it, how There's like this little community those younger guys have.
Yeah, I know, and I think that just strengthens the point I was gonna go to. I haven't made national team yet, so the only times that I've been at national team camp are just as a practice partner. You know, hey, I'll come wrestle, I'll come get better. And I can remember one of the times I was there. I think it was the first time I was there. Coach Linlin was talking about like exactly what we're talking about. Hey, we're team, you train together, get better together. We're here for 2 weeks before the World Championships. Like this is the time to come together and help each other out. Because regardless of what club you're from, we're Team USA, and we're going to go over as Team USA and represent the United States. So that was a talk that had to be had to all of these people. And then I don't remember who raised their hand, but somebody like was like, hey man, it's kind of tough to just now be Team USA when the rest of the year we're trying to kill each other. And, you know, he's NYC and he's Army and he's Storm and he's whoever. And now we're just going to be Team USA. Like that was very much the feeling that some guys had. And it was some of that, I think, is personality, but that's 100% accurate. There's definitely a shift in that regard, and that collaboration can only help. It's going to help whether or not it helps an individual. Of course it is. Like, but you might, you know, oh man, I trained with that guy and then he beat me. I shouldn't have shown him my move. But in terms of advancing the sport forward and winning medals, which is all of our goals, I think that's a great thing, and it's good to know that it's widespread. It's not just, you know, a couple guys. So that's definitely a positive thing that I hope. Hopefully that trickles upwards, you know, to some of the older guys.
Yeah, I hope so too. But I think the program is actually, as crazy as it seems, in a pretty good spot, considering the last time anybody competed internationally was the Pan Am qualifier, which was, you know, the high point of the quad practically. So yeah, time will tell, I guess. You gentlemen are going to help me with something right now. At the close of each episode, we have the social media concerns. That's exactly how I have to say it. I don't have to say it that way. I could say it a different way, but it's become the thing to say. It's not a lot of extra work, but it's a little extra work I have to do, because then I got to go and check out everybody's social handles and everything else. And I got to make sure I have it on a piece of paper or on a screen in front of me and read it perfectly and spell it out if it's weird. And I'm keeping you guys on board for this end part here. So why don't you guys do it? So we'll start with you. Social media concerns, Calvin German Arrow. What are your social handles so people can look you up and follow you if they so choose?
Calvin_German Arrow is my Instagram. I think my Facebook's my Facebook's Calvin German Arrow Nary, but I'm very rarely on that. And then my Twitter is, I believe, C German Arrow. Just no space. Yeah, that's about it.
No Snapchat? Really. You don't want people Snapchatting you out?
You can add my Snapchat. It's just Calvin_4. I guess that, yeah, whatever works. No 14, no add me on Snapchat.
No TikTok? You don't got no TikTok, Cal?
I do. Surely the watch them because they're the most entertaining thing ever. But I don't make videos. Not really my gig. And you're like, that's more kind of in Pat Smith's area of expertise.
He was doing some really good work on Vine, RIP Vine, before that.
Vine was funny. So. I got a kick out of Vine. I didn't have an account, but I remember when everybody used to share the videos on Twitter, I used to laugh at them. Ortiz, go ahead, please, sir.
So technically, Alec Ortiz only has a Facebook, and House 8 Graphics has a Twitter and Instagram. But anybody who like knows me at all knows that it's just me. So everything is at House 8 Graphics. HouseAgraphics.com, even if you need t-shirts. It's kind of like an inside joke that anytime there's a picture of myself or a video, you know, wrestling, I'll get tagged and stuff, you know, and I go like third person, like some weird, like I'm an actual company with multiple employees, not just my wife, who I can occasionally con to helping me count some shirts, and the cat who just gets in the way. You know, I used the hashtag owner player coach from one of our favorite movies, Semi Pro. You know, Jackie Moon was an owner player coach.
That's a great movie.
It's very, very underrated. So yeah, House 8 Graphics, Instagram, Twitter. I tried to do a Snapchat once, and it wouldn't let me have House 8 Graphics. I had to be like House 8 Graphics 1, and I was so offended that I'm like, there's no other House 8 Graphics out there. This is garbage. I don't want to be on this app. So just those two.
All right, and that was Calvin Germanaro and Alec Ortiz. They both said their own social handles, so I don't have to do that, actually. Is there anything worth editorializing this final segment? Well, we had the U23 and Junior Nationals last week, which I thought were great tournaments. And the reason why I say that and the reason why I'm pluralizing is just because it's two different age groups and there are two different tournaments. It's not the same tournament. But even still, both age divisions had one thing in common, and that is they were both, for Greco, they were both full of collegian types or folk style types. I mean, at junior, you're not going to have the same number of college age guys as you will at U23, obviously. But I thought that was terrific. Now, the level of wrestling overall was skewed as far as if we're going to be hard markers about it, talking about Greco, you know, you see a lot more scrambles when you mix in the college types. You see different methodologies. You don't see the same kind of like, you know, it's not hardcore positional station to station Greco with some lifts here and there and everything else. I mean, not that you didn't see any of that. You certainly did. But the reason why it was so important is obvious, and that is participation. And we have this conversation usually in the spring, early summer, when it used to be university, but now it has been replaced by U23. But as the cadet world team trials and the old university world team trials are university nationals, now it's U23. And it's like, okay, well, the athletes that would populate cadet, that do populate the cadet age group at the world team trials, that type of athlete is normally a little bit more locked in, a little bit more enthusiastic. Maybe they go to a club that has some credentialed Greco coach or two. It's just a different thing for them. And therefore, what do you see in Akron in the United States for the cadet world team trials? You see smaller brackets, right? Each weight category, much smaller brackets than you see in Fargo, which are enormous, 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 enormous brackets. Not that these brackets in Omaha were like that. They couldn't be, just given the circumstances and everything else. But it was like a mini version of that in a way, is that you saw a lot of these. Really, I mean, I like to refer to them as all-style wrestlers instead of folk-style wrestlers. But, I mean, essentially what you had, especially a junior, is you had a fair number of folk-style wrestlers with some good Greco experience, and they performed awesome. You know, the way that they compete, even at U23, the same thing, is that no matter what, and there is that divide, that disconnect in the United States between Greco and folk style and Greco and freestyle. And the thing is, the best quality folk style gives American wrestling, and certainly Greco-Roman, is that grinding mentality. And we talk about that all the time. That grind, that it doesn't matter what the rules are, just going to push, just going to push, just going to try to beat the other guy down. And I just think that is one of the hallmarks of the American wrestling style, period. And it's something that Greco can use an infusion of. If you can mix that with better positioning against foreigners for our age groups as well as our seniors, I just think that's tough to deal with for the rest of the planet. and we could go on and on about it, but suffice it to say, I personally was really encouraged. I loved Omaha, not just because we all miss watching wrestling or anything like that, because I have gotten a nice fill of wrestling lately with Zagreb and Poland and Moscow and everything like that. But no, I was encouraged to see so many collegian types, so many folkstyle types show up and just kill it. And they did great. And it just demonstrates what a talented wrestling country the United States is. And if we can just pull more of these athletes into Greco, I think the sky's the limit once again. So hopefully we can move in that direction. Okay, we did all the social concerns, right, with German Aaron Ortiz. So we will move to... He wasn't on the program this episode, but still, Dennis Hall. Yep. We saw a brief signs of life of Dennis Hall on Twitter. That being said, he's still, still out of the loop. But if you'd like to follow him on there, you certainly could, at Dennis Hall, WGW. But you'd have better luck following him on Facebook at Truth of Wrestling. Those three words, Truth of Wrestling, where he'll post videos and some concepts, philosophies. I don't know. Anyway, that's your best bet with Dennis Hall. And for USA Greco-Roman news and athlete perspectives, please go to 5pointmove.com and follow along on Twitter at 5PTMove. That's it for episode 41, everybody. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you soon.